Welcome to the Birth Activists podcast, hosted by me, Becky Scott, and fellow doula and activist, Samantha Gadsden.
Welcome to the Birth Activists podcast. Good afternoon, Samantha Gadsden, back with me as usual. How are you doing?
I'm good. Hi, Becky. Hi, Gwen. Hi, Lucy.
Yeah, we've got a lovely Gwen and Lucy with us today. Gwen and Lucy are two parents who fairly recently free birthed, and this episode is going to be all about free birthing. Gwen, I'll come to you first because your birth happened in September last year. Would you like to just give us a little brief introduction to yourself and who you are and what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Becky. So, as Becky said, my name's Gwen. My background, I trained as a veterinary surgeon. I worked as a vet for 4 or 5 years. I now work in something called innovation consultancy, where I, for a lot of my time, I assess risk of healthcare procedures. So I guess that's certainly something that came into play when I was making decisions around my own care, so to speak.
Yes, a useful one, I imagine.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Gwen. Where are you based in the country?
I'm in Cambridge.
Cambridge, lovely. So Lucy, would you like to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yes. So I'm Lucy. I'm 39 years old. Day job, I work in PR for a tech company. So my job is kind of reputation management, keeping people in and out of the press. And in terms of where I'm based, I'm up in Cheshire. I had my little boy Louis at home via a planned free birth in May. So he's just turned 6 weeks old.
Wow. So yeah, you're another one that's going to be quite busy at the moment, keeping people out of the press. So just as we're recording, literally yesterday, everything kicked off in the Conservatives. So yeah, there's going to be lots of people very busy doing your job right now. And yes, your little boy, only a month old then, or 2 months now. We're in July, aren't we? Gosh.
Yeah, 6 weeks old.
Lovely.
And both Lucy and Gwen have full versions of their birth stories in my little group.
Yes,
as well.
So you can go and access that, or you can obviously listen to the podcast because they're going to tell us all about it now. Let's start with you, Gwen. Back in September, obviously gave birth to your daughter. Tell us about how you got to that point of wanting a free birth. So start sort of, you know, what happened during the pregnancy and what got you to that particular decision.
Sure. So the first I even learned about free birth, I didn't even know it as a term, which I thought, you know, it's funny now looking back, but was a Guardian article in the pandemic, which mentioned her grief. I'm sure you remember it. And it just talked about how maternity services were having problems, and so people were thinking much more about free birth. And this was something I read and I thought, oh, that is interesting, but you know, I've had two successful home births before. You know, if you have healthcare providers, I can't see why I wouldn't use them. So, you know, I just sort of kind of put it aside as something that was interesting, but wasn't really something that was particularly relevant to me.
Yeah.
And then I got pregnant with my third child in 2020. And then very sadly, at 21 weeks, she died. So she was born in November in 2020. And there were some aspects of the care that I received at the hospital that were really, really bad. And this was the whole experience was awful. But the one good thing about it was when I was waiting for the induction, the midwife who came in, I was in floods of tears, midwife who came in and she said, oh, your name's Gwen, isn't it? Because you've got pictures of bugs on your wall. You can't see, I've taken them down actually now. But she had been student midwife there when my son had been born 2 years before. And she said, you know, she knew me, and that's so unusual. And it was wonderful. And she gave me her email address and she said, look, if you get pregnant again, I'm trying to be part of a continuity of care team because I really enjoyed your home birth. It was, you know, it really was life changing for me. I've opted for this team. You know, would you like to be with my first mum? And I was like, OK, this sounds amazing. And so I did get pregnant again fairly quickly. And I contacted her, and the continuative team was late, but it got set up, and I had 3 months where I had a this midwife who was on the end of an email. She was so supportive. She knew my backstory. And then the funding ran out. And I got a letter. She then got in touch. She was really sorry. She negotiated as much as she could with the head of midwifery, but it was just another example of the fact that there is no money in the system. Yeah. And it felt almost like a bereavement. Like it was really catastrophic. You know, that feeling of being 36 weeks pregnant, planning a home birth and realizing that everything I'd planned for, despite a previous very traumatic experience, wasn't going to happen. And at that point, I said, I know that the home birth service is often suspended. What are the chances that it's going to be suspended again? She said, the odds are not great. We haven't suspended it officially, but, you know, in sort of a certain month, there's probably about half of the days where it's suspended for up to 4 hours at a time. And I was like, well, those odds are crap, to be brutally honest.
Yeah.
And so suddenly I was like, okay, right, what am I going to do? And so then I remembered Sam's rebirth group and the home birth group, which I hadn't actually been part of up to that point. But I was like, I need to prep, and this looks like an amazing resource. So I spent 4 weeks reading everything I could. I'm a veterinary surgeon, so I've seen a lot of births. You know, I've seen a lot of very, you know, very, very normal births, and I've previously had home births. So it wasn't that much of a stretch to then, you know, decide that I was going to do it on my own. And funnily enough, the more that I learned, the more I read, the less I actually wanted anyone else there.
Yes, I think, Sam, you'll agree, you probably hear that quite a lot, and I definitely have done, is that the more people read about it, the more it's like, yeah, actually, why would I want somebody else at my birth? Just another pair of hands that probably aren't necessary, especially when you've had two, you know, normal, uncomplicated home births previously.
Mm. Yeah, I've spoken to Gwen before, but I've offered my condolences for the passing of her baby as well. So, but yes, I just want to offer them again. But yes, I mean, lots of people join the course in a group just to prepare for the just in case, and quite a lot of them then stay to free birth, although that wasn't their original plan.
Yeah, I had a client the same. Yeah.
What about you, Lucy?
So I've got a daughter, Matilda, who's now 4 years old, who was born in 2018. And my first live child, I should say. And I knew from really the beginning, I've always had a bit of a fear of hospitals. Prior to Matilda, I'd had a missed miscarriage. And during the pregnancy with Matilda, I'd had an ectopic twin in my left ovary. So I'd had a really early surgery, and I was told that it was unlikely that Matilda would survive the general anaesthetic to remove the ectopic, which had ruptured my left ovary. So I had this kind of fear of hospital, a real anxiety around that pregnancy in general, and spent maybe the first 30 weeks kind of in fear until that kind of 28 week viability stage, where you know if you were to have your baby that there's a great chance that baby would survive. And during that, I moved up from London, and I'd left a job at Amazon, which was really kind of high pressured, and really wanted to be back close to my family up in Cheshire. And I moved up. I was under the care of Chelsea and Westminster in London, who, in fairness, were great. They'd saved Matilda through this surgery that I had. And came up here and had read, my husband, who's big on research, had read all the horror stories around our local trust hospital. There'd been, I think, 18 neonatal deaths and an investigation underway, which was kind of quite frightening. And he was like, well, probably don't want to birth there. So I looked at Liverpool Women's, which is a great hospital. But then at about 32 weeks pregnant, a friend of mine recommended this brilliant NHS funded service called One-to-One Midwives. And I signed up with One-to-One. They came to my home kind of the next day when I was maybe 31 weeks pregnant. And by the end of that appointment, we'd agreed on a home birth. And of course, I'd never even thought it was possible. You know, I thought, I'm such an anxious person. And yet somehow, because I'm also a control freak, the idea of having, you know, a birth in my own environment where I felt safe, noting that my local hospital was where I didn't want to give birth and where I would be unlikely to kind of reach the hospital I'd booked with, in labour potentially. It seemed like a really good idea, and I just had to kind of convince my husband and my mum, who were my birth partners, and both of them were incredibly supportive, because I think that they knew that if I was happy, then things had a much better chance of going really, really well. And they knew that I had this fear of hospital. So I moved forward with one-to-one and pretty much had that sort of dream first labour. There was no staffing concerns at that point. You know, it was pre-pandemic. You know, there was never any home births have been cancelled in your area issues. I called one-to-one, or my husband called one-to-one, when I thought I might be in labour. I didn't really know what to expect. And I had a 6-hour labour from kind of first surge to baby in arms in the pool. And it all was fabulous. But I was really uneducated, and I was kind of taking a punt, really. I was reliant on the midwives, who actually were brilliant, thank goodness, never even mentioned the word transfer to me and were incredibly hands off, and just kind of said, go with your body. But had it not been for them, I could have ended up, you know, with an induction or in a completely different scenario, or transferring in fear. So with that birth, even though it was textbook and brilliant, and I have no bad memories of it, it was something that I was just hoping for the best. And it happened to turn out that way. So this time round, it took me 4 years to decide on another baby, to be honest, because my daughter, who was much wanted, was very, very colicky. And I thought, one will do. And then lo and behold, as you do, you think, oh, a sibling would be really, really nice. So this time round at 39, I thought, gosh, I'm geriatric. You know, I'm probably going to have you know, people making recommendations that I birth in hospital. And I just don't want any of that. It's not good for my anxiety. I was already on a home birth support group, which I found really, really helpful resource. And lo and behold, I read about the emergency and free birth group through that group. And right at the beginning of my pregnancy, even though I had no intention at that point to free birth, I contacted Sam and said, I'm going to sign up for this. Just bear with me. I just want to make sure the pregnancy is viable. So I waited until, I think, 20 weeks, because obviously just from previous, I think, again, I'd had a whole bunch of missed miscarriages between Matilda and this baby, another 4, actually. So I was kind of nervous that it might not happen for me. But when it did, I jumped on that group and I was so excited, and I was kind of observing and reading all the stories. And as time progressed, and I should add, I decided to, rather than again book with a hospital, I decided this time one-to-one didn't exist, to sign up with Private Midwives, the company, again, so I could have as much control as possible over my birth, the birth that I wanted, you know, this beautiful home birth that was really hands-off. So thought, you know, money should be no object for your perfect birth if you can afford to. I'd rather invest in, you know, having what, you know, having my last child in a positive way. So signed up with Private Midwives from probably the 10-week mark, when I kind of felt that things were going quite well. Had all the various tests, went through 28 weeks with them, having everything under the sun that they offered, and obviously everything was done at my home. Always discussed the home birth element. And as that progressed, I started to feel that my experience with those guys was becoming more and more clinical, more so than it would have been with the NHS. And I felt that the control over this birth that I was paying a fortune for, I should add, was slipping out of my hands, and it was everything I didn't want. And I found my anxiety levels were peaking again, because every visit, which, and these visits were like every week, because, you know, you get your money's worth, but you don't really want them. Every visit, you know, there was a mention of transfer, or a mention of, in the scenario that you have preeclampsia, in the scenario that you have gestational diabetes, in the scenario that you have coliolitis, or whatever it's called, all of these things that I thought, I'm the most low risk pregnancy once I get past that 12 week mark. There were no flags for anything. And also, I'm a big believer in intuition and knowing your own body. And it started to really irritate me. And at that point, I had contacted Sam, actually, just to ask for her advice. And I'd read a few things about Private Midwives on that group as well, that kind of set my anxiety again through the roof, and decided that it was time to let them go, and do it myself, because we couldn't reach a compromise. I was very open about my feelings. I said, these are the things that are deal breakers for me. What are deal breakers for you? And there were things like, you know, the placenta has to be out within an hour, otherwise you will transfer. We will have to monitor you every 15 minutes and every 5 minutes. And I said, well, can we get that to 30 and 10? And again, that felt like too much. We will have to be in the room with you at all times during the pushing phase and various other things. And it just felt like my dream birth was slipping away from me. And in that meantime, I'd already been geeking up on, you know, everything, all the resources in Sam's free birth group, and thought, I feel really empowered. I love research. I love planning. I'm a control freak. Why not just go for it myself? And the biggest thing I had to do was convince my husband that free birth was the route I wanted to take. And for him, the turning point was the discussion about getting rid of private midwives, but having a doula for that kind of emotional and mental support, not just for me, but for him as well. Him feeling that there was someone experienced there that, yes, had to be hands off medically, but knew their shit enough to say, probably trying to transfer, or everything's going really, really well. And pressed ahead with that, and kind of went all full speed ahead, dug myself into the guides in the free birth group, to the point where I had note after note, read every single thing, watched every single podcast, and really started to enjoy this process of planning my homeopathy, my aromatherapy, my pain relief, you know, even things like, you know, the resuscitation podcast, all of these things that kind of gave me a feeling of control, like nobody knows me and my body and my baby better than me. So why can't I do this? And that was it. We were all set and set on it, to be honest with you. Sorry, I think I've really rambled and probably answered.
No, it's really, really useful stuff, Lucy.
And you know that stuff about private midwives, and I'm sorry, I know they have got some amazing individual midwives, but their corporate policies for women who don't want these things are more coercive than the NHS, because within the NHS, you can decline transfer, and they're not, you know, we know the midwives can't walk out, and you can decline monitoring, and you can decline this, and you can decline that. So to be paying for care.
Yeah, I think people have that perception that if they're paying for care, then they're going to get what they want.
Yeah,
and that's not the case. No.
You're talking £8,000 here.
Wow.
And it's a lot of money, and it can be done in installments, and it's a hell of a lot of money. And I think it's because women think, wow, this is one thing, the most important thing in my life. It's worth missing out on holidays for the next decade or whatever that I'd plan to purchase, you know, over the years, to have this birth. And then to get the sense that your midwife isn't really backing the one thing that you're made to do as a woman, and have had no issues in the past based on your previous labor, you know, for that, it just kind of, it felt crazy to me. And that was the thing. It was just the other thing that was playing on my mind is, what if the baby's breech? And I had this obsession in my head that I couldn't shift, that the baby might be breech, and I wasn't willing. I wanted a vaginal breech, and I wanted that at home. And if I had to do it myself, I was going to do it myself, as long as, you know, ideally it was a frank breech. And again, I mentioned this to them, and they'd mentioned, oh, we have this specialist breech midwife who can come to your home. Anyway, when it came down to it, and I asked for, you know, is this lady available? Even though I should add that, embarrassingly, I wasn't even breech, but I had, again, to have it in my head, I had to know that there was that option. No, she didn't exist. She'd since moved to the south and wouldn't have made it in time, and so on forth. So again, that pushed me to, I ended up thinking, well, I could carry on paying £8,000 and have a weekly urine sample and blood pressure test, and then not call them until the head's out. Why should I do that? So we came to a kind of, and again, I should say they didn't do anything wrong. I didn't have a bad experience with them. It was just, we couldn't compromise, and they were very gracious in letting me go, and vice versa. And I think that they respected my decision. And I know people have had different experiences with them. If you need handholding, and free birth isn't for you, they're fantastic if you get a good midwife. And mine was a lovely, nurturing, kind lady, but at no point had I heard any positive stories about recent home births that she'd attended.
Aww.
And that was kind of like, hang on a minute, why aren't you telling me that last week you went to this and it was fabulous? Instead, it just seemed to be about inductions and transfers. And I thought,
that's not what you want to hear.
So, Gwen,
how did you manage your sort of antenatal period, knowing that you wanted to free birth? Did you decline anything that was offered to you? Did you have some awkward conversations with midwives about what you were planning, or did you keep it a secret? What was your sort of tact on that?
Oh, I had the biggest piece of luck, Becky, which was at 38 weeks. I had a routine midwife appointment. So this was 2 weeks into me thinking, I'm not planning on calling the hospital. And I had a routine community midwife appointment, and it was in the surgery, but her computer system wasn't working. Oh, small bug. Her computer system wasn't working. So she said, don't worry, I'll book your next appointment when I get back. And she didn't. And so it meant that I didn't have any more appointments. And it was great because my first baby was born at 42 plus one. So I declined post-ex induction. All my babies have been late, and I was like, I just really don't want to have to go through this. I don't like the conflict. I'm not planning on telling them that I'm not going to call them, because, you know, I think it's easier. I think a lot of people who free birth, some people are like much braver than me and happy to have that conversation. But, you know, a lot of us just say, oh, the baby came really quickly, didn't it? So, you know, not having any pressure, I didn't have any more appointments, and it was blissful. And actually, in a way that I hadn't realized, how that kind of marking of time with midwife appointments at the beginning of the pregnancy, I found it quite fun. And actually towards the end, it just started to feel like a ticking time bomb.
Yeah.
And so I just went, and I was like, this baby is going to come at some point. I have no doubt about it.
And so how was the labor and birth for you, Gwen?
It was about 40 plus five, my waters broke. And I'd been having intermittent contractions all day, but they were very, very mild. My waters broke, and I thought, oh, great, baby's going to soon be here. Baby was not here. So the next morning, I think I got up at about 3:30. I woke up my husband. I was like, let's get up, and then maybe the labor will start. It did not. So Tuesday, I walked and I baked, and there was no baby. Wednesday, I walked and I baked, and there was no baby. And as I said, I've got a lot of experience in reading evidence and assimilating risk. And so I looked at the evidence, because obviously, you know, the guidelines now are induction after 24 hours or 18 hours, or, you know, however close it is. And depending on what trust you're at. And I was like, gosh, the adverse events from not inducing are really pretty minimal. So from the best evidence I could find, induction prevents 1 in 100 cases of a non-serious infection, but there's no increase in perinatal mortality. So death of the mother or baby, or severe consequences. And, you know, as I said, I'm a vet, and I was like, so we're saying between 10 and 15% of people have their waters break before contractions. Now, if this was really serious, evolution would have strongly selected against it, because anything that is going to affect maternal or baby death, that's not going to be a trait that survives. So actually, it's either got to be that there are some pros and some cons, or the cons are really, really small. And so I thought, okay, well, you know, I've seen the recent papers on induction and long-term consequences for both the baby and the mother. There is no way in hell I'm having an induction at this level of risk. And then obviously the other thing that people talk about are antibiotics during labour. And even though the NICE guidelines say that there is no justification for routine use of antibiotics if your waters are broken, I know for a fact that my local hospital gives them anyway. And I mean, I do tons of work with companies that are looking at the long term effects of antibiotic use. And I'm like, I just don't want to be part of that system. So my husband's also has got a scientific background, so we went through the evidence, and we said, right, well, we're not going to tell anyone, because I don't want anything different about my labour. I don't want any pressure as soon as that baby's out, and then the kind of legal responsibility changes. I don't want any pressure to be going to hospital, so we're just not going to say anything. So I just had a sanitary pad in. I had waters leaking. So that was Wednesday. Then Thursday happened. Then Friday, it was a little bit more. And I spoke to my 4-year-old daughter, and I said, oh, I think the baby's going to come today. And she just looked at me and she went, Mummy, baby hasn't come on a lot of days. And I was like, Yes, I'm aware. And the baby didn't come on Friday either. And but I have to say that week was really glorious. I was having contractions very intermittently, very mild. I just had so much time to think about my baby, to think about my labour. I felt so happy. And, you know, I look back on that time and, you know, people go, oh, gosh, you were in labour for like 5-6 days. Yeah. It was glorious. I really didn't want a precipitous labour. And this was fantastic. So
it would have been very different had you had been in contact with the midwives, would it not?
Yeah, absolutely. I was so lucky.
By day five, they'd have carted you in. Yeah, they would have done anything to get you in by then.
Yeah. And so then I went into labour. So on Saturday, I'm sure it was going to happen. I did like dancing, you know, I took my clothes off. I was like, get all the oxytocin going. Nothing happened. My husband came upstairs and was like, get your clothes on. Let's go downstairs, go for a walk. Let's see what happens. Went for a walk. And then about 2:30, I started to get the endorphin, like the feeling of the endorphins. And my husband, we didn't have a doula. So my husband's again a vet. He's seen a lot of births, probably more than many home birth midwives, I would say. And so I kind of walked around, I wiggled. You can see that I've got stuff on my ceiling, so I could hang bars off that, hang off that. And then at about 3:30, I started kneeling down and feeling, you know, things were definitely progressing. And then about 5:30, I said to my husband, oh gosh, you know, this is going to be really horrible. Please, can you, please, can you get like a hot compress? Because it helped in previous labours. And I knew I was in transition. He did not. Apparently, I was very calm. I was just like, can you get a hot bottle of some hot water? The hot water was really bloody hot. So I was like, get away from me. And then I was like, oh, there's a massive contraction, proper roaring. And I put my hand underneath. I was like, oh, I can feel the baby's head. And he said, at your cervix? I said, no, in my hand. I had one other massive contraction and it was like head, shoulders, body, everything out.
Head, shoulders, knees and toes.
Yeah, the whole lot. So we scooped the baby up. We didn't know she was a girl and she was just, you know, calm and quiet, and it wasn't a water birth. So it's still a little bit more of a shock than a water birth. But, you know, she sort of looked around and we didn't really have to do anything. She just, we tipped her up so the fluid was coming out the right way. And she started moving. She started she made a few little noises. And my God, the feelings of ecstasy after that birth were like nothing. I'd had great births as my other two, but something about having no interruptions to the whole process, it just kind of, I just felt like I could do anything. And yeah, and then afterwards my husband called the hospital after about 20 minutes. They said, call an ambulance. I didn't realize they were going to do that. So they also sent a midwife. So about half an hour after she was born, the paramedics and the midwife came at the same time. And I said, I'm happy to see the midwives, but I don't want to see the paramedics. So I never saw them. They just stayed outside, which was great. And the midwife was fantastic. She came in and she just sort of said something very quietly, sat in the corner, said, you're happy to have the placenta naturally. I was like, yes, please. And she didn't really say anything. And then the placenta came with no problems at all. And it was, the whole experience was absolutely transformational.
Amazing.
I say there is nothing to behold. Like, I love all birth and talk about all birth, but there is nothing to behold like the sight of an uninterfered with, unadulterated, untouched birth, in which, like, as a doula, I very much, at most free births, I just sit in the corner, quietly holding space. They've hired me to hold space, exactly the same. Not, you know, the clients who hire me for a free birth aren't looking for hands-on care. They just want to sit. Often they've got other children, actually, and mostly they just want you around just in case somebody needs to look after the other one. But to watch that interaction between a couple in the birth room and nobody else is in the way.
Amazing.
And when I spoke to the midwife afterwards, I didn't mention that my water broke, but I said, oh, have you ever seen anyone decline antibiotics for their newborn baby? Because the evidence isn't strong enough. And she said, oh, I have seen people try, but I've also seen clinicians make social service referrals for refusing antibiotics. And I was just like, well, I thought to myself, it's a bloody good thing I'm not telling you anything then.
So we're going to anonymize the podcast now then, yeah.
Yeah. It's so wrong, because antibiotics are not risk-free. They're not risk-free. And the long-term implications on the health of mother and baby from routine use of antibiotics in pregnancy, in cesarean, and then in birth and we must be given antibiotics. If we look at the induction rates and the cesarean rates, over 40% of babies now must be having antibiotics.
Well, I've seen animals die because we do not have an antibiotic that can fix their infection. I am so pro-antibiotic, like so unbelievably pro-antibiotics, but I want my child, if they need an antibiotic, I want the antibiotic to work. Yeah. And actually, because of those short-term incentives on in the obstetric units, the pressure is to get the child past that two-week mark and discharged. And yeah. Actually, that is not how I prioritise the health of my child.
Yeah, absolutely. What would be really helpful for maybe other people that are facing a similar situation is if we could post the links then in the show notes, perhaps when you could pass on to me, the links that helped you make your decisions as well, specifically those ones about antibiotic use and also waters breaking and that risk of infection. We can obviously put that in the show notes for people to have a read of themselves.
And of course, on this one, the pressure from antibiotics is coming, a lot of it is coming from parents. The pressure for antibiotics for GBS, which let's face it, is just a routine bacteria. And generally speaking, if it was in any other field, so statistically insignificant is the risk that it wouldn't count. It's just because of it's not just because it's babies, but because it's babies, that tiny, 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 tiny risk, which I would have to dig out, is so this so feared.
I think it's 1 in 135,000, Sam, if you were going to screen everyone. Just there you go. To your listeners.
You know, and we give antibiotics to all, and the push from parents, and I see it in my groups, shall I get a private GBS test? I want those antibiotics. Is coming from, it is because it started here in South Wales, I understand the history of it. It's coming from parents and it started here. And it started because of a sad adverse outcome. But nobody considers the risks of those antibiotics in all of those babies. No, let's move on back to happy birth. Lucy, yeah. let's flip
Lucy,
back
let's
to you.
How your labour and birth went.
Okay, so, I mean, actually, it's interesting because like Gwen said, the weight that lifted after antenatal care stopped was like nothing else I can explain. I just suddenly felt free, like all my anxiety ebbed away, which is so bizarre for something that's meant to actually instill confidence in you. So for me, that was a real flag that going down the free birth route was the right thing for me. And I should probably add as well that I'm the absolute opposite to the Zen wild birth goddess. I wish I was that person. I'm the person that has to research everything, that has every test under the sun, but I like to do it my way. Yeah. I don't like to be told. I like to make an informed decision and then move forward with a test if I think it's appropriate. So for me, it wasn't about not having scans, about not having this, about trying to be a maverick, about trusting, you know, the universe. It was about making a decision based on all the facts and the support that I'd found in the group, the stories I'd read, and of course my own intuition, which I really, really believe in. So once, as Gwen was saying, once that kind of antenatal stopped, I felt like amazing about it. And I was just excited and I was just eager to get really stuck into the research part, because I think that for me, this overwhelming amount of research was actually really, really helpful. That's what I need to tick every single box to then go, I'm ready now, I'm ready for my labour. It doesn't matter if I have a million print-offs that I don't even read during labour or no one pays attention to in my birth plan. It's in my head and I've done it. And so now I can tick that box and move forward. And that's the kind of person I am, you know, probably in professionally as well. So my birth plan was kind of ridiculous in the sense that it was, you know, it was pretty looking, but it was very, very long. And I had a whole print off for my doula, Gemma, and my husband on homeopathy and exactly what pilules and tinctures I needed at exactly every single stage. And, you know, in my birth plan, it covered off everything from, you know, the free birth I wanted to, you know, if midwives or paramedics had to come, to if there had to be a transfer, to if there was a section that was under anaesthetic, or a section that was under general or a section under local, everything was covered off. and never obviously was needed. And the same applied with, I think I really seek my mum and dad's, my parents' approval in things, my mum in particular, because she attended my first birth. And I was afraid to tell her about the free birth. And I ended up letting it slip to my dad, who is petrified of birth and has never even changed a nappy, went with all three of his children and had to carry the placenta off with my mum's home birth in the 70s in a Tesco bag to be incinerated, and was freaked out for life. And, you know, I think I told him, because he said something about, when's your next midwife appointment? And I went, there isn't one and there won't be any more, just to kind of challenge him. And he must have gone home and told mum, and mum was like, am I getting the sense that there's not going to be anyone at your birth? And I was like, yes. And her main concern was, I just don't want you to be in pain. I feel like you need gas and air. And I went, if that's all you're worried about, then we're winning. If that's all you're worried about, access to gas and air, which last time I couldn't use anyway because it made me vomit, I said, then I feel cool. So no more, mum. I only want positivity, or don't speak to me. And then she was like, I support you, I've got your back, blah, blah, blah.
Fabulous.
Aww. So I went off work at like 38 weeks. I was going to go to 39. And then I thought, I can't get in the zone. I really want to read. I want to chill. I want to walk. I want to bounce on my ball. I want to do various things. And really, it was at that 39 week mark that I just started to calm and go into myself and stop having all these lunches with friends that I promised when I finished work that actually were distracting me. And I was posting a lot on the free birth group, like everything that came into my head. I think my last one was like 8 hours before labor. And I was like asking about the umbilical cord around the neck, which I'd had with my daughter 3 times in the water, and I'd unraveled it. And I just wanted to know what happens if that happens in a lamb birth. And just those last things that I needed to let go of in my head to move forward. And then it was 40 weeks exactly. So the baby came on his due date, if a due date exists, and my due date actually, but also the same due date that I ended up getting given by my scans. So who knows, he was on time, which was kind of mad. But I was watching The Notebook in bed. My husband had been sent up to the top floor weeks earlier. I was watching The Notebook and it was like 2 a.m. I was crying, big puffy eyes, and couldn't sleep. And I think I'd had an argument with him the day before. My hormones were all over the place. And all I said when I finally turned the telly off at 3 a.m. was, please God, don't let me go into labor tomorrow, because I'm not ready. I don't feel strong enough. I need rest, and I look really ugly, and I really want him to take some pictures this time. And lo and behold, I wake up at 5:30 a.m, 2.5 hours later. And you know, when you can't get comfortable in bed, and I felt a bit like, you know, if you feel nauseous, I didn't feel nauseous. I just felt, and I thought, this is it. And I got up out of bed at like 5:30, and I thought, right, before anything happens, just in case it's fast, because with my last one, it wasn't so much that it was fast, it was 6 hours, but I went from 0 to 100 immediately. So I had no latent phase to get used to things. And when people would talk about eat some food and have a nice drink and do a bit of cooking, I was like, sorry, who does that during labor? Because I've never experienced a labor where I could do anything but go, ah, because it just goes straight into it. So I thought, before any of that happens, I'm going to set up my space, which was already set up, but put my lights on and do this and put my music on and, you know, set my aromatherapy up and just do a few things while my daughter's asleep and while my husband's asleep upstairs. So I did that. And then I went up to him at about 6:00 a.m. So half an hour later. And I went up and I was like, I think today's Labor Day. And I sat on his bed and I was like, but then I didn't feel anything at all. And I was like, maybe I'm wrong though. And he said, what do you want me to do? And I said, go and set up the pool, because we hadn't set up the pool at all. Like in my last one, we did that again at the beginning of labor. And he's very quick and very good at following instructions. So he went down and set up the pool. And I said, and half fill it for me, but hot, because it could be a day. Who knows? Like, I just didn't know. And then I went back into my bedroom and I was like, right, I'm going to do all the things I've learned through Sam's group and through various other research that I didn't do with my last one, because this is about me learning about my body this time and not following instruction and not just hoping for the best and thinking, God, I really hope this is real labor, otherwise I need to go to hospital because it hurts. Instead, I was like, all of these feelings mean something. These are all the baby getting into the position he needs to be in to come out. So there's nothing to be afraid of. And I thought, I'm going to stay upright. I'm going to do as much as I can. And I'd also kind of liked, at the same time as Sam's group, which was all of my intelligent research-led stuff and stats and facts and really helpful women. And obviously Sam, who I'd message little bits and pieces to, saying, do you have you any thoughts on this, and what do you think about CBD oil, and what do you think about, and I'd also liked the Naked Doula and her Instagram page for kind of more sort of fun, you know, floppy face, floppy fanny and all of that stuff. So I had this combination of fun and research stats and kind of confidence and empowerment. And so I was standing up and I was kind of jigging around and trying to do a dance and what have you. And things got very intense very, very quickly, to the point where my husband came up and said, the pool's half full. And I was kind of like a wild animal headbutting walls when he came into the bedroom, roaring, but like not sort of doing everything with that kind of open mouth and grabbing. It was too late for a TENS machine, obviously. And it materializes that I must have woken up in transition, but it had been a pretty calm transition, because I woke up at 5:30 in the morning and the baby arrived at 7:05. So it was really, really fast. So my husband came up and I went to the loo and I said, I need to do a wee. I know that I have to do a wee to reduce my bladder so that the baby can move down. So I did a big long wee. And then I stood up from the toilet, turned around and just vomited, because I hadn't had any system clear out, but it just came out. But it was all water and fluids, because obviously I hadn't eaten since the meal the night before. And after that, my waters went. They just went whoosh, because obviously the force of like this purging thing that just spontaneously happened. But when I was on the toilet doing my wee, I thought, this is so intense, maybe I need to trust myself and have a little feel to see what's happening with my cervix. And I'm no expert, but it was far down. I knew it was my cervix, you know, because I'd had to use progesterone in my pregnancy at the beginning for, you know, after miscarriages and what have you. So I knew what I was looking for, and I knew it was low down. And I could feel that it was not dilated when I was doing my wee, but I could feel the head behind the skin. And I knew the head was right there, and I knew that my cervix was low, but it just wasn't open. It would have probably been open a centimetre or so. And I went, well, shit, you better dilate to 10 centimetres in the next hour. Otherwise, I'm in trouble. And I just said to myself, you're going to do this. Your body, I said to my body, you're going to do this. And then I stood up. I was sick. Like I said, it happened. It just came. And then my waters went. And then I was like, I need to push. And my husband, who saw my waters, just go, oh, I didn't have that with my last one. I was sitting on the toilet. And my waters trickled through just during transition, but they went poof. And I went, go and fill the pool up. And he ran downstairs, and it must have only taken him about 5 minutes. I think he'd overfilled and got it to the right temperature anyway. And he'd done such a good job. And he came back and he was like, it's ready. Do you need help? Because at this point, I'm thrashing around like a wild creature, like on the floor doing God knows what. And I've got a big graze on my forehead where I've hit a wall or something, oblivious to this happening until I looked in the mirror hours later. And he said, you need help getting down the stairs. And I went, no, I just need to get Matilda's clothes ready for school. And suddenly I had that moment of rest and be thankful. So I got her clothes, and then I walked down the stairs feeling like absolutely fine, put her clothes down. And at this point, my husband's rang my mum and dad to say, Lucy thinks she's in labor. I still wasn't like, well, this is before the waters went. Can you come and pick up our daughter and take her to nursery early? Because I had wanted her there, but I realized with all the thrashing around that she would really annoy me if that was to continue for hours. So they were on their way, and they only live five minutes away. I got downstairs, put her clothes on the side, and then I came around into the living room and I saw the pool, and it was like some kind of crazy addict who, my eyes were bulging, and I saw the pool and I was so excited by this crazy like draw to the pool that suddenly I turned into an animal again. I just threw myself into the pool, like so clumsy. I didn't climb in. I literally dived in because I went under. Just immediately bearing down, like it was just that kind of ejection, fetal ejection thing just started to happen. And I'd never experienced that before. It was like, what should I be doing now, midwife, in my last labor? Should I push? Because they were like, you're 10 centimeters, you can push. And the next minute I spot my husband behind me with a sieve picking up little rabbit droppings. And I was like, oh, sorry about that. And then he goes to the bathroom, which is maybe 10 meters away, just around the corner, you know, one of those little closet bathrooms. And as he's there disposing of my poop, the head came out, just came out. And I yelled, there's a head, come and film. Because I really wanted to remember that this moment and experience, because I knew that you just over time, it just slips away from you. And he was like, what? And he came back and he got the video out, and then the body came, and it was just beautiful. But while the head came out, at the same time as he came in from the toilet, my daughter appeared. She'd woken up and appeared around the door and was able to witness the birth of her baby brother, which was in my birth plan. I said, if it's going well, please, can someone go and wake? I was just hoping she'd be asleep. Can someone go and get or wake up Matilda when the head's out? Because I thought there'd be a few minutes to go. And again, it was like what I'd asked for happened. And she was just there and saw it. And then my parents turn up, and in the 5 minutes that they've been told to come and collect her, in the 5 minute car journey from theirs, there's a baby. And they came in and they're like, what's happened? And it, all the while, my lovely doula Gemma, who again my husband rang at 6:15, who made it as between the baby's arrival and the placenta, so was able to come and support me for the rest of the day and help me birth the placenta, but missed the birth as well, and came in and she was like, this is not how it should be. Well, it is, but she was like, no, how have I missed this? I only took 20 minutes to get to you. Oh. But it was just incredible. And it was so, so intense, but my body just took over, and it was honestly magical. And as Gwen said, the feeling of elation, and my face on that video, the joy, and my husband's voice saying the emotion and the respect he had for me, like he couldn't believe it. He was like, we've done it. You've done it, baby. You've done it. And I brought the baby up. The baby came out, and I felt the head, and I held the head, and I waited because I didn't want the baby to go behind me, and I wanted to do it myself. And my husband was calling Gemma at this point, going, I'll come and let you in through the garage. And the body slipped out, and I brought the baby round. And because this time round, I was sort of bringing the baby up to the surface by myself without a midwife helping, I hadn't spotted that the cord was around his neck. So he was out of the water, and I just unraveled it, and again felt incredibly, incredibly calm. And it was so obvious to me that the baby was fine. There was no noise, nothing. There was nothing, but I just knew he was fine. There was no movement really. He just looked like he was sleeping. And I just held him and stroked him and kissed him. And he was all floppy. And I just waited for a bit. The cord obviously was unraveled. And he was a beautiful, beautiful pink color. Straight away, my daughter was gray purple for ages because of all the compression during pushing. He just didn't, there was no pushing stage. He just came out. After maybe a minute, I think it was a minute because the video is 1:58 long, and that was from head to him coughing and spluttering and, you know, realizing he was earthside, I guess, and letting out a little cry. I gave him a little bang, just really for my husband's sake and my daughter's sake, so they knew he was alive. Oh. But it was just magical. It was beautiful. And then after that, I stayed in the pool. And I think one of my fears, again, that I'd shared on the group was with my daughter, the placenta was a bit of a struggle at home. And I think it was because the environment was wrong. I was like, I've done it. Now can I have some champagne? I forgot there was another stage of labor, of birth. And the lights were on and there was chatter. Whereas this time round, I was like, nope, none of that. All of the skin on skin. But I had my peppermint oil prepared in the bathroom in case I needed it. I had shepherd's purse and angelica root prepared as tinctures for, you know, postpartum bleeding if needed, or the passing of the placenta. I can't remember which was which, but I've got a big guide which I can share. And instead, I just stood up in the birth pool with my baby here, and the placenta just fell out. It just, massive old beast of a thing fell into the pool, and Gemma helped check it over for me or with me, and said, you know, it's looking pretty good. I think it's intact. And I felt fine, and there was nothing. There was no grazing. There was no tearing. It was just perfection. The only thing is, after the elation and feeling like I could have like run a marathon or something, I definitely had that sort of moment of like faintness afterwards when I eventually came out of the pool, where I was a bit, you know, and I think I had a little faint moment. And actually it ended up, the reason for that I now know was that my iron levels had tanked a bit, and that was not to do with blood loss. The blood loss was so, so minimal. I mean, the blood loss was really only with the placenta, if that makes sense, just the blood clots that are attached to the placenta. But obviously between 28 week bloods, where my iron levels were very good, well, they were like 115 or something, they must have depleted naturally for the remaining 12 weeks of the pregnancy. And they were a little bit low. So I ended up on ferrous sulfate, but that was the reason for, you know, for feeling a little bit faint and not quite myself, because I'm the kind of person that typically would be up and about after a home birth, because you can, if you want to be, because it's lovely, calm process. But yeah, it was magical. And we spent the day on the sofa, and Gemma was there holding my hand and feeding me all of the various homeopathic things. She was like, let's have a look. This one's good for faintness, have a bit of that. This one's good for shock, have a bit of that. You know, and it was magical, and the baby was just there, you know, breastfeeding, and we of course cut the cord after, you know, the very, very delayed cord clamping, I guess, because it just wasn't a priority to, you know, dress the baby, weigh the baby, do anything with the baby. It was just perfectly calm. So maybe a few hours later we did the cord, and my husband did it himself via YouTube, hilariously. He was like this, because we'd got a cord ring, which was from the home birth supply site that Sam shares on the group, who were excellent, and I got everything there actually that I needed, the pool, etc. And the tie is very American. It's just a tiny little rubber loop that's sterile, nothing like the plastic clips and what have you. And it was incredible, because it's all you're left with is like a little tiny rubber ring that you can't even see. And then that fell off on day two, and it, you know, complete, none of the catching on the nappy, none of that jazz. So it was amazing. And then the placenta we popped in the fridge. I didn't intend to do anything with it, to be honest, because it just wasn't for me. But you know, there were bits of me where I thought, oh, I might blend it up into a smoothie, but right. I just thought, no, I'm not going to.
I'm just going to cut across you a second, Lucy, sorry, so that we can say goodbye to Gwen, because she has to leave.
Oh, thank you so much, Gwen, for telling your story. If you've got anything that you want to add on the end, then, you know, send us a little recording or some information, and we'll put it out to everyone that's listening to the podcast right now.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much for having me, and I wish everyone all the best with their births, because a good birth is so good for your baby and for you in the short and the long term.
100%.
Thank you, Gwen.
Thank you.
Bye. Sorry about that, Lucy.
Oh, no, that's okay.
Lucy, did you actually, obviously Gwen was saying she did call the midwife and see the midwife after the birth. Did you do that at all, or did you decline having a midwife?
Yeah, so I, at that point, did not have any access to midwives. So when I got rid of her, when private midwives and I parted ways, my access to midwives was done. The only thing I did, there were a few things I wanted to kind of tick off my list again as part of my mega prep. And also because, of course, I'd seen a few mentions of social services through women who'd had terribly, you know, bad experiences, yeah, or been treated very poorly. And I wanted to kind of obviously make sure everything was prepped. And something I worked on with Sam's help was, you know, how to obviously notify the birth myself, which I was determined that I would do, and did a couple of hours after the birth. I managed to get a contact through my lovely doula, Gemma, for a lovely lady at my local trust who was lead midwife for Better Births. And I told her quite defensively, I told her my plans maybe 4 weeks before the baby actually arrived for a free birth. And she was incredibly respectful, very, very helpful, absolutely lovely. And I said, I need you to get me to introduce me to the head of midwifery, or find the details for the local child health unit, so I can notify the birth myself. And, you know, she offered me, she said, look, if at any point, we respect your, you know, your free birth, you do whatever you like, but if at any point you want our team during labor, we have a duty of care, our home birth team will come out to you. if you want any checks, if you want to come in, anything at all. And it was nice to know that that option was there. And of course, she said, are you sure you don't want to book with them just in case? They're really lovely. And I went, no, I don't. I don't want to go through another booking appointment. I don't want my anxiety levels rising. I don't want any of that. But thank you. It's nice to know that the option's there if I were to need it during labour or if there were a problem. I said, but out of interest, is anyone experienced at vaginal breaches? Because I wasn't letting that one go. And of course, there wasn't. But she said, if you chose to have a vaginal breach at home and a free birth, again, we have a duty of care to send people to support you. And I thought, brilliant. What a lovely lady. So I was really genuinely impressed with her. And I think she's making positive waves at our local trust. But she ended up introducing me to the child health unit. So I had their contact details. But interestingly, she forwarded me an email and they had said to her, no, that woman cannot notify the birth herself. It needs to be done through a clinician, you know, through a health worker, blah, blah, blah. And I went back again with the amazing info from Sam's group. Actually, the 1907 Birth Rights Act says this. So you're wrong. And actually, I will be notifying the birth. Please let me know what you require. I believe this is what you need. Is this correct? And they came back within 10 minutes. Yes, that's correct. And I was like, phew, okay, brilliant. And I asked a few questions like, I do want a red book. Will you be able to provide that to me? Can you confirm you'll give me an NHS number ASAP so I can sign my baby up with a doctor? And I don't want a health visitor. So can you make sure that that's on the system too? Because I found her useless last time round and I don't want to go through that again. And they were, again, really, really respectful and very, very helpful. So I didn't have any of those. Oh, and the lady I spoke to from Better Births, she said, I'm going to go away and do some research, and kind of alluded. And I said, because I said to her, I'm doing everything right. I don't want any reports to social services when I'm doing everything by the book. And she kind of came back and confirmed that everything I was doing, which I knew was legal, but, you know, just to have somebody who's actually gone out of her way to research and hopefully learn for future women, and maybe think a little bit more about it. So I copied her into the email when I notified the birth and she rang me immediately and she was like, huge congratulations. I'm so impressed, blah, 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 which was lovely. So yeah, it was all in all actually a very positive experience. But you asked about the midwife and I rambled on for ages. I did want a NIPE check and I originally looked into independent midwives and there were a couple of ladies, lovely ladies who again, I think are on Sam's group who are local to me, but neither were available around my due date. One was away for the end of May and or until right towards the end of May. And the other one was quite a way away and there was a reason why we didn't move forward with her. And I thought, worst case scenario, I won't have one, or I'll go to the GP when I'm ready after a few days, or I'll call the home birth team and see if they can come out. And actually, when Helen, the lovely lady from Better Births, rang me, she said, would you like someone to come and do a check? And I said, yes, please, tomorrow, though, not today. And he sent somebody out, a lovely, lovely home birth midwife who was just an absolute dream, to be honest, and I was very impressed with her. They sent her out at about 4 o'clock the following day in the afternoon, and she came and she was gone within half an hour, and she said, everything's perfect, what a beautiful color he is. She weighed him, she asked if I wanted vitamin K. I decided I did want the vitamin K injection. Again, obviously that's completely down to everyone's decision. I knew that it was highly unlikely that he would have a clotting problem, but I just thought, I don't want anything coming back to bite me on the bum when I go and see my doctor, because I know people will have comments about this, and I just want to have done things how I felt comfortable.
That's a valid concern, isn't it, Lucy? Yeah. Because, you know, you're an educated person. You've made choices based on evidence and educating yourself. And it's been an informed choice. You know, that's what you've said during the podcast. You know, logically, you shouldn't have to worry about whether some doctor or midwife is going to refer you to social services because you've declined a service that isn't mandatory.
Yeah, exactly. And yet somehow they still manage to, you still end up thinking, am I going to be getting knocks on the door or unwarranted visitors? I'm sure I probably am. And that really, and one of those I thought might be the health visitor just turning up willy-nilly. Yeah. It was an interesting one because I just thought, I know once I speak to these people that they'll realize that I am completely informed. And And actually, they were really respectful. And they said, you probably already know this, but did you know? And I was like, yeah, I know that. Thank you. And that was all down to the guides on Sam's group. And then to the point where all my friends were like, gosh, Lucy, you should move into midwifery. You should do. And I was laughing and I was like, oh, not in the state of how it is these days. And I'd rather be a doula. But no, it was an interesting process. And I think as well, I did end up booking a visit to the GP for myself, because like I said to you guys, I wasn't quite feeling myself, and I knew that there was no bleeding. I knew that there was intuitively knew there was no problem. And my instinct was that I had anemia, mild anemia, and would need iron supplements. And my doctor's across the road, literally 10 meters away. So I booked an appointment, and lo and behold, I went in to see the GP, who's a woman who is in her 40s, who should be supportive and nice and recognize, you know, that I'm only asking for support where I feel it's needed. And I felt like I was being blamed, that my anemia was because I chose to have a free birth. Mm. And she was really snide little comments. First of all, she goes, oh, it says here you had a free birth. What exactly does that mean to you? And I went, well, it means that my husband and my four-year-old were the only people present, and we birthed the baby ourselves. Yes. And she went, right, okay, and how was that? And I talked her through, and I went, actually, I'll just show you the video, because that shut her up, because it was so calm. And she went, gosh, weren't you worried? The baby's not crying. And I went, it's very normal for a home birth baby not to cry, because it's such a calm, uninterrupted birth with no intervention. Wow. And I was like, why am I educating this lady? And then she goes, she looks, I've got the baby in the sling, and she looks in and she goes, looks like he's got a bit of a suntan to me. Is he jaundiced? And I said, actually, I had the maternity support worker here today, because it was day 5 or day 9. I can't remember. And I opted for those. And then I was signed off at day 9 with literally perfect baby, perfect everything. And I went, gosh, what a strange comment. I said, because the maternity support worker was just saying that he's the most beautifully pink baby she's ever seen, and he's not got an ounce of jaundice. And she went, and she said, well, I hope you're having another check. And I went, could it be that my husband is half Samoan? He's a Pacific Islander. Could it be that this is his skin tone? And she was like, maybe. It was so frustrating, but I just thought, oh, bugger off. But it really, yeah, it really put me off. It just irritated me. And I came home feeling quite annoyed. And I hate the fact that you have to get defensive over something that was so much better than any hospital birth could possibly have been for me, and my choice, and why she couldn't have been respectful and positive about it. And a friend of mine, who was 28 weeks pregnant at the time and was going in for her hospital appointment at the local trust, said that all of the midwives were talking about the crazy free birth lady. Like, that crazy free birth lady's my friend. And they said something like hippy dippy, unmedicalized, risky. And I just thought, outrageous, how dare you? And that really got my back up as well. And I thought, how ironic, from a trust that I've had a complaint, a pal's complaint outstanding with them since August 2021, after my last miscarriage, that hasn't been answered. And you're quibbling with the fact that I had a beautiful free birth at home and have produced a healthy baby, that you guys said, this makes my job easy. Their visiting midwives were like, gosh, this is just the easiest part of our job. You know, well done, beautiful, blah, blah, blah. So anyway, it is what it is, isn't it? But
I think that's the thing is that, Lucy, anyone that sort of listen to the beginning of your story and of Gwen's as well, we'll know that you've obviously both been in touch with trauma and loss as well. Some people will think, oh my God, well, why would you do that? Because it's so risky. But when you really get down into the details, you know, like you've done, told your story so eloquently, and really, it's really important that people know those steps, you know, what was going through your mind making those decisions. Because, you know, like you just said, why would you want to go into that environment when you've had such an awful experience, when you've lost a pregnancy or a child? That why would you expect the care when you're delivering a live baby to be better?
I know. And all the evidence is there to be seen for anybody. And I think what's tricky is when you have a home birth, you have a tendency to not you don't want to be seen as preachy. You just desperately want anyone that you know that's pregnant to have a home birth because they deserve it. And then beyond that, possibly for the real, you know, for the brave, but for the super informed, for that to, for a free birth to be with their first baby, wow. But certainly if you, for certainly a second baby when you've done it, to consider a free birth and just to have that trust in your body. And I like I said, I'm not that person that's kind of necessarily massively spiritual or in touch with myself. But I know that a woman's body is made to do this. I know that my body's capable because it's done it before. I've done all the research. I know that intervention is the antidote, or the absolute, you know, everything you don't want for a successful, positive birth experience. And to just tune into your body, I really genuinely believe that when I sat on that toilet to do that first wee at half an hour before the baby ejected himself, when I asked myself, you are going to do this, you will dilate, you will do this, you will do that, all of those things were answered. And that wasn't luck or fate or a wish. That was my body doing what it's told, because that's the power that we have as women when we're not being told by somebody who's not inside your body what to do.
Or a man.
And it's just, it's insane. It really is. So it blew my mind.
It's like, you know, there is research out there that just say that even if you are planning for a home birth, not that you actually have a home birth, but if you plan a home birth, you're more likely to have a positive outcome.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know Sam with all her groups, it's like, you know, come to the home birth group, even if you don't have one. Come to the home birth group, because just by actually going through that process of educating yourself on home birth and the physiological way that birth works, and, you know, all your options and all your rights, just the education alone is going to help you to have a positive experience.
Absolutely. And not least because even non-home birth midwives say stay at home as long as you can. And the irony of you ring up and say, you know, a friend of mine who's just given birth a few days ago, who was dabbling with the idea of a home birth because she had a very smooth labor before, ended up having a birth before arrival, because when her husband rang and said, my wife feels like she's pushing, they didn't believe her.
Yeah.
Even though she'd had a 3-hour labor with her first. And so she had her baby on her bedroom floor in a free birth that she didn't want. And I'd said to her, you are made to do this, but she made her own decision, and that was that she felt comfortable going to hospital, but didn't end up going to hospital, and now wishes she'd planned for that home birth.
Yeah.
But yeah, you, of course, you stay at home in your safe environment as long as you possibly can anyway, because the likelihood is when you do go into hospital that you're going to take a couple of steps back in your process anyway, except for the women who see hospital as their safe environment and turn up to hospital and then their baby ejects itself in the path.
Yes.
That's fine, because some people, and I found typically it's medics, you know, my neighbours are both GPs. They're lovely, lovely. But oh my God, they were like, why wouldn't you just opt for a lovely elective section? I was like, why would I opt for a major traumatic surgery that's dangerous for me and baby when I've had a really good vaginal birth with my first? Are you insane?
Yeah.
And that's because all they've known in their training is, you know, in their training on labor wards, all they've ever seen is the worst births, because that's all they get to see when they're training, because that's how they learn.
100%.
So it's just, it's just mad. And that's the only thing, I have to try not to sound preachy, because it's not me trying to say, oh, I've done this and therefore you should. You know, when people get funny about you suggesting they breastfeed and they think you're creeping there as well. It's more, do this for yourself. It's amazing. It's life-changing. It's just, oh, to be able to look back on that forever blows my mind.
Lucy, just listening to you and your story, I can sort of, I can hear the oxytocin, and I can visualize what your birth was like. And as a doula, like Sam said at the beginning, it's just amazing being in those situations with women that are free birthing and that are, you know, taking responsibility for their own health and their baby's health. And it's not risky and dangerous. It is about having informed choices and making the choice that's right for you. And it might not be right for everybody, but it was right for you and your baby. It was right for Gwen and her baby too. Stan, before we sort of start to wrap up the podcast today, have you got any way you want to interject? Because you've been ever so quiet through this, which is so unlike you.
I think Lucy was so enthusiastic that I didn't need to speak, to be honest. Lucy and Gwen's enthusiasm and love of birth is there. And what I find interesting, although it wasn't deliberate when we were looking for people to do this podcast, is your births are so contrasty. Gwen's was that long waters breaking for days and days and days. And yours was super fast. Although we didn't plan that, we actually had both types. And actually, you're both professional women. So I work a lot with spirituality in birth and work a lot with the divine feminine and the sacredness of birth and being in tune with yourself. And that's fine. I do have my, you know, women with sage and crystals and sacred pregnancy art. And you two are both at the other end of the spectrum as well, in that you've both researched and researched and researched and researched and researched. So what it shows is that this kind of birth is for everybody and not just, you know, tie-dye hippie around a campfire gonna pop yeah. my baby out on a field kind, you know, and both are equally valid. But it's been interesting to have you here as well, because I didn't realize you did quite, although we spoke quite a lot, I didn't realize you had done quite as much research as you've done. Who was your doula? Let's give her a little plug as well.
I think I know her. She used to live near here.
Yes, you do. You definitely know it's Gemma White. Oh, yeah.
And okay. Yeah. Absolute, you know, and that response that she had, oh, that shouldn't have happened without me. That was my biggest fear as doula, missing a birth, right? I used to be, oh my God, what if I miss a birth? What if I miss a birth? I used to dream about missing a birth. I used to wake up in a blind panic without my foot and check my phone and my husband's phone and my house phone just to make sure I had missed a birth. But actually, now with my clients, I work on, if they have their baby and I haven't got there yet, isn't that amazing? Oh my God, you did it. And you didn't even need me to be there. And like quite a lot of people book me to do online support and then never ring me, right?
And yeah, and I can see how beneficial that would be now, having gone through that experience without Gemma actually making the baby's arrival. And yet I found her really soothing and comforting for the afterbirth, for the placenta, which was a fear of mine, for the care. Like I held her hand pretty much all afternoon when I was feeling a bit faint and sort of a bit pathetic after this amazing elation and power woman. And it was just so nice to have her there. And she's just such a warm, wonderful person. And of course, ironically, she visited me yesterday actually to come and re-meet Louis, my little boy, which was lovely as well, just to check in on me. And yeah, magical. And again, had I known or been educated about doulas for my last birth, again, it probably would have been different once again, because I probably would have called the doula and not the midwives, and who knows what might have happened. But yeah, so I really would recommend that hugely, like an investment in, it's an investment in your, for yourself.
Yeah.
It's well worth it. And for us, it was a no-brainer, because obviously we'd finished with private midwives and had made a saving there anyway. She's fabulous.
I think also, though, just looking back at your interactions with private midwives, you know, thinking about how your birth ended up, it was probably a good idea that happened, because potentially you might not have made that choice.
They would never have made it, for starters, as well. But like you said, I might not have had that labour. It's all of those things that happen along the way change your outcome, because so much of it is in your mind. I really do believe that you are in control of your situation once you take full control and reject external help. And so you just suddenly become, which I've read so many times on Sam's group anyway, you just become so in tune with yourself. So either they wouldn't have made it, but I don't think that my mental state would have been as good if I'd still have had guys. And I just thought, this is my last baby, this is the last time I'm going to be pregnant and have a baby. And I really want it to be something incredible and memorable. And I want what these women on the group, the birth stories I've read, where they talk about feeling the baby move down into the birth canal, and that they know what's happening in the body. And I didn't have that for the first, because I had a comfort blanket of two midwives there to hold my hand. I didn't need to be, you know, to do anything. Whereas this time it was on me and I nailed it. And I'm so bloody proud of that.
You should be.
I could not have done that without that group. I would never have even known. I don't think I'd heard of free birth until I saw the group mentioned on the home birth support group. So to have gone from, it was just, it was brilliant. And also to see my parents who are in their 80s, to see their admiration and support and going, you said you were doing this, you knew you could. We never doubted you. Wow. And my dad was walking around telling everyone how proud he was. And she's amazing, that woman. She's an amazing
woman. How beautiful. Absolutely. What a fab. But this is the last podcast of this series. And
it is.
From you and from Gwen, what a fabulous, fabulous, because a lot of our podcasts are ranty and about failures in service providers. What a fabulous.
There's been a bit of that, but not much.
A lifted podcast about the beauty of birth to end this season on. What a 100%. Joy, absolute joy. And if you could see Lucy, listeners, that you can't, her face is just beaming, just talking about this birth as you beaming. And Gwen's was the same. And these beautiful births that you had are, you know, and the groups, I feel like I'm Ariadne, the spider in the middle of the web, right? But I just hold the web together, and all of the peer support and all of you people posting in the groups, you're the people who make the magic. I'm like the little pot or the cauldron, if you like, and you're all the ingredients.
Yeah, but you're the enabler, and it's amazing.
It's the role of the doula, isn't it? Yeah.
But without you, there would be no magic and there would be no groups. Yeah, I might hold them all together, but without the people who post in them, the other birth workers, the women, the birthing people, everybody who posts in those groups.
Sam, you do what you do best, and that's to hold space for people and to provide that space for people. Yeah.
It's a giant space holding.
It is. So Lucy, before we go, have you got anything that you want to say as like a last, message to anyone who is considering free birth right now?
I would just say, look at yourself, trust in yourself, believe in yourself. As I've said, I am not that person, or was never that person, that thought this would be for me, that I could do it. I researched, I took my time to go through the resources that Sam has tirelessly put together, and I made the most of them. And that has given me the most incredible memory that I'll carry with me for the rest of my life. And I honestly do believe that this is the way that births are moving now. The more and more people having home births, more and more people having unattended births because of lack of staffing, why not make it a free birth? Because this is what you're born to do. Mm. And Gwen, as a vet who witnesses animals, giving birth with no issues at all, because they're not being touched and prodded and poked and intervened with. We are mammals too. Why would we not be the same? And I just think, give it a shot, because the thing is, I said to myself, there's no point thinking, what if, what if, what if. You deal with the scenario when you're in that scenario, and just see, even your planned free birth, if it doesn't end up going to plan and you decide that you want to go to hospital, or there's a need for you to go to hospital, or a need for you to have a midwife there or a paramedic there, deal with it in that moment. Just stay at home in your safe place and know that nothing's set in stone. And just go with the flow. And honestly, I just can't recommend it enough. I really can't. And I just wish that I had done it the first time around, to be honest. And I wish I wanted more children so I could do it again. I'm actually thinking, God, I wish I could be a surrogate for like my gay best friends. I could persuade them to have a baby and hope that they trust me at the ripe old age of 40.
Never say never.
And if you can get a doula, because the support that they give, the confidence that they instill is second to none.
And you can have us for an hour. Right, both Becky and I and most other doulas do our, if people haven't got the funds for a full doula package, there's lots of things that we do.
Birth preparation, virtual doulaing, all sorts of stuff that Sam, myself and other doulas offer if you can't or don't want attendance of a doula at your birth as well. So there's lots of options.
We became very inventive in lockdown, and it has stuck. A lot of the things that we weren't doing before lockdown have actually proved to be very, very beneficial, like the group, like lots of things.
And they made things a bit more accessible, hasn't it, really?
Yeah, it made us think in different ways. Okay, so and that intuition and that knowing, that's what I'm going to end on. It also, you know, a lot of it, some women are absolutely adamant they're going to free birth, and towards the end, they feel that there's something and there's a reason not to, and invariably they are right. Yeah, so that intuition works always round. It's not like I've decided to free birth, as you said, go with the flow. And that's how I suggest people approach free birth anyway, with an open mind, all birth actually.
Yeah. Absolutely. Thank you so much, Lucy. Thank you so much to Gwen, who had to leave us, unfortunately. But I hope everyone that's listening to this podcast has got something out of it. I know that it's going to be inspiring for many people thinking about free birthing, or even just, you know, who are pregnant that are looking at their options, because, you know, you pointed it out in something you said earlier, Lucy, is that, you know, I talk to my clients about it, is that putting a birth plan together, it's not the actual plan that has the power, it's that process of educating yourself on your options, and on, you know, the evidence that's out there and the research, being educated, making informed decisions so that you are in control of your birth. As Sam said, this is our last podcast episode. We're having a little break and we're back recording in September with some new episodes. So this is a great one to finish on. We will see you all back at the end of the year when we start recording again. So goodbye, Lucy. Goodbye, Sam. And goodbye, listeners. See you next time.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Birth Activists Podcast. Until next time.